This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. First, the National Security Advisor, and now the Attorney General. Just weeks after Michael Flynn stepped down from the Trump cabinet, Jeff Sessions is facing calls for resignation. Both Flynn and Sessions were apparently lying about corresponding with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak before Trump took office. Mr. Sessions has now recused himself from any investigations into the role of Russia in U.S. elections. It should be noted that Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, also met with Kislyak. Russia has responded by saying that the heightened scrutiny of Trump and his cabinet's dealings are the result of anti-Russia hysteria. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told the press, quote, "All this is very much reminiscent of a witch hunt and the McCarthyism era, which we all thought was long gone." Indeed, Lavrov makes a point. But others counter, where there's so much smoke, there's got to be a fire. Joining me to put it all in context is Norman Solomon. He is the coordinator of RootsAction.org and executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. Welcome to the program, Norman.
Thanks, Sonali.
Okay, so I know you've been one of those folks who've said this really does, you know, the Democrats seem so obsessed with Russian interference in U.S. elections. However, there does seem to be a lot, or for this does seem to have been a lot of communication between Trump, the people he surrounds himself with in particular, and high-level Russian officials such as Sergei Kislyak. Does any of this seem very disturbing to you?
Well, yeah, it is concerning, and I think it's notable that the news media in this country and those on Capitol Hill and positions of power do not frame this in terms of a problem with corporations and the wealthy dominating our politics and indeed so much of our planet. It's put in very nationalistic terms. And so I think that we should avoid, on the one hand, the extreme of saying that there's no problem with Russia at all, that Russia is just a benign government and that it's all cooked up, all smoke, no fire. But on the other hand, there's a tremendously concerning dominance of discourse coming from Democrats, progressives, many people who define themselves on the left, as seeing the Kremlin as some kind of nexus of evil, of that Putin is some kind of devil. And it's preposterous and flies in the face of the history of the last two decades, where the United States has steadily moved up to Russia's border, against the promise of the first President Bush, expanding NATO up to the borders essentially of Russia. And the United States, rather than being simply sinned against without sinning, has in fact stoked a lot of conflict with Russia. So I think that we need to get a grip and put this in some kind of overall balanced perspective, rather than trying to gin up a new Cold War, which would be extremely dangerous, not only for this country, but the entire world.
Now, with the Michael Flynn case, it was basically determined that he, you know, said he had no contact, then it turns out he did, which Republicans and the Trump administration had to distance themselves from him, so he resigned. And so it seems to be an issue of lying. Let's focus on that just for a minute. Jeff Sessions was accused by Nancy Pelosi of lying under oath. Did he actually lie under oath? If so, that's kind of serious, right?
I think it's clear that now Attorney General Jeff Sessions lied under oath to the Senate committee during his confirmation process. And if an average person, if you will, in the United States lies under oath, and it's clearly the case, that person is apt to go to jail for quite a while. So unless somebody who's in a position of power is to be above the law, then the fact that the Attorney General of the United States lied under oath should have very serious consequences. I don't think there's any doubt he should be forced to resign, and he should probably be prosecuted as well.
So it turned first when asked about any meetings, he said he hadn't met with anybody in the Russian government. Then his story was, well, I met with them, but we didn't talk about anything, other than just the campaign. Let's actually watch the video of what Sessions said when he did recuse himself of any investigations into Russian interference in the elections.
I should not be involved in any campaign investigation. I have studied the rules and considered their comments and evaluation. I believe those recommendations are right and just. Therefore, I have recused myself in the matters that deal with the Trump campaign. The exact language of that recusal is in the press release that we will give to you. I've said this, quote, I have now decided to recuse myself from any existing or future investigations of any matter relating in any way to the campaigns for President of the United States. I went on to say this announcement should not be interpreted as confirmation of the existence of any investigation or suggestive of the scope of any such investigation, because we in the Department of Justice resist confirming or denying the very existence of investigation. So, in the end, I have followed the right procedure just as I promised the committee I would, just as I believe any good attorney general should.
And that is Attorney General Jeff Sessions announcing his recusal from any investigations into Russian interference. No such investigation exists, but he's basically saying if it does come to that, he would recuse himself. Now, Norman, he sounded properly chastened, but this announcement of recusal came very shortly after Trump said he had total, quote, total confidence in Sessions. What does this incident say about and coming so soon into Sessions's tenure and so soon into Trump's tenure? What does this say about the Trump administration?
Well, if lying flagrantly was a disqualifier for being at the top of the Trump administration, then the president would no longer be president, and much of the cabinet would be gone as well. I mean, lying is a way of governance and public communication for the top reaches of the Trump administration. So it's no surprise Trump would think it's not a problem that the now attorney general lied flagrantly to the Senate. I think we should keep in mind at the same time that essentially the main accuser of Russia from the so-called intelligence community of the United States, that Russia, we're told, hacked into the DNC and John Podesta Clinton campaign emails, and then we're told without evidence that WikiLeaks received those emails prior to its release of them from Russia. The main accuser is James Clapper, who until a few weeks ago was the director of national intelligence. And Clapper flagrantly lied to a Senate committee in early 2013, just 3 months before the disclosures came from Edward Snowden about mass NSA surveillance that proved that Clapper had lied. And so the public still wouldn't have access to the information that Clapper flagrantly lied to the Senate committee if it were not for Snowden. So that's where I think we get into big trouble with agencies like the CIA and the NSA being the sources that all too many people credulously believe when they tell us what has happened in terms of Russia and the elections. It's the job of top CIA officials to deceive, to often outright lie when they think it serves their mission. And, Clapper's a case in point. And I think this gets into a big problem, where a lot of people who should know better automatically assume that if a report came out of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence or the CIA or the NSA, that it's necessarily true. And I think history tells us that that is a foolish assumption.
So, in fact, what we've heard from our intelligence agencies over the past really 6 months is that there is a lot of coordination between Trump and Russia. But what we haven't heard is about what? What exactly? I mean, we're told that there might be evidence that Russia hacked the elections in the service of Trump. If so, how could they have pulled something off? Were they hacking into voting machines in swing states? Were they in charge of the fake news that might have swayed the election? If so, that was a pretty long shot that just somehow might have worked. So these questions, then there are many, many questions. If, you know, given that Flynn did talk with Sergey Kislyak and Sessions talked with Sergey Kislyak, specifically what did they talk about if those phone calls were being tapped? Those questions don't seem to have any serious satisfactory answer, Norman.
Well, you know, for one thing, the fact that somebody talked to Russians should not be an indictable offense or necessarily an offense at all. And I think that we should look askance and really be very wary of a phrase that we sometimes hear, that Russia, quote, hacked the election, unquote, because that's such a broad brush statement to the point of absurdity. Nobody claims that the Russians hacked in and changed the voting count from election day last November. When we look at what seems to pass for evidence, a lot of the independent technical experts that I think have enormous credibility that I've read the assessments from, say that there's some decent chance that the Russians, quote unquote, people in Russia, presumably affiliated with the Russian government, may have hacked into the DNC emails, the Podesta emails. There's much less evidence. As a matter of fact, it seems to be not much more than inference from the U.S. intelligence agencies that the email releases from WikiLeaks were obtained from Russia. I mean, that's just sort of a presumption made. And on the surface, it might seem to be logical. On the other hand, there are people inside organizations like the DNC who leak information. That happens all the time. And if it was that easy to hack into a Podesta email, who Podesta succumbed to a phishing expedition of the most rudimentary sort, then somebody else could easily have hacked in as well. I mean, it would be charitable to say that the DNC had really crummy defenses against the most basic kind of hacking. So, you know, we have a whole Cold War being escalated by the U.S. mass media, by Democrats, especially on Capitol Hill, based on what? A lot of it is conjecture or inference, and a lot of it is interpreted to put the worst possible light on events. So on the one hand, we shouldn't be in denial that there's nothing untoward that happened. But on the other hand, to really get on this bandwagon, which so many liberals and progressives in this country have done, as though our democracy's main threat came from the Kremlin, is preposterous. We know that the main threat to democracy was the exclusion of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions, because of their race, because of their economic background, because of the zip codes they lived in, because of the barriers that were set up to make it more difficult and in many cases impossible for those people and those demographic categories to vote. And yet we're being told that the biggest threat to our country is from Russia. And I think it's imperative that we realize how profitable politically and financially this kind of frenzy is for those sources that want to escalate a Cold War, who do not accept the idea that we need to establish détente with the Kremlin. These are very dangerous times, and let's not get carried away by the propaganda onslaught that the mainstream and corporate media are throwing at us.
So then, Norman, to settle the matter once and for all, shouldn't there be a Russia investigation just to later rest any of these questions? Because otherwise, those rumors will keep swirling.
I'm all for, yes, an independent investigation. It's an open question whether people on Capitol Hill are capable of doing that.
And actually,
and
just to,
remains.
I think it's important also because when we talk about corporate interests, it's very likely that Trump does view Russia as a really good place to do business. I would like to know what business dealings Trump has with Russia, you know, setting aside Russia's role in getting helping get Trump elected, which is the big question. What is Trump's interest in Russia as a president who is also first and foremost a businessman?
Well, first and foremost, a businessman who has enormous economic interests around the world, including in the United States of America, 50 states, the District of Columbia. You've got Trump International Hotel just blocks from the White House, financially gaining from the fact that this is a president. The Foreign and Domestic Emoluments Clauses of the United States Constitution have been violated from the first moment of the Trump presidency. The main tenant of Trump Towers in New York is the state-owned Bank of China, one of the main lenders to the Trump Organization, is that same bank. So it's not a matter of just Russia. It's a matter of predacious corporate capitalism embodied by Trump and the Trump administration consolidating with the U.S. government at the very top. And in many ways, if we sort of step back from this, I think, Sonali, we have a broad outlines of a conflict that is now raging. On the one hand, an administration headed by Donald Trump, which has many fascistic elements, which is flagrantly racist, which is xenophobic, which is hostile to immigrants, which is extremely bigoted towards Muslims, which targets people from south of the U.S.-Mexico border in a vicious and nativist xenophobic way, and on, we have a very dangerous administration in place. And up against it is what some call the deep state, but agencies like the CIA, who are very worried that the broken clock that's correct a couple times a day, Donald Trump, who is actually speaking about the need for good relations with Russia. The CIA hates that stuff. The NSA hates that sort of viewpoint that Trump has articulated. And amidst, for instance, a lot of the really wacky stuff, unintelligible, irrational stuff that Donald Trump did at his first solo news conference on February 16th, were some very cogent and constructive comments about the need to get along with Russia, if at all possible. He talked about something that our U.S. mass media rarely get into in this entire uproar, and that is that there are several thousand nuclear weapons being pointed by the U.S. at Russia and vice versa. And it is in our interest to greatly understate the case that relationships between these two governments improve rather than continue to deteriorate. Donald Trump overall seems to get that. The CIA leadership hates that idea. The mass media, including the supposed best, the New York Times and the Washington Post, they're uninterested in that profound point that has so much to do with the possible survival of this planet. So we have what could easily be called a contradiction between a somewhat fascistic administration in the White House and people who want to get him out of there so they can get on with the Cold War.
Right.
And that puts those of us who have a rational view of the future and what our priorities ought to be in a very difficult spot.
Right. And as you said, Trump, like a broken clock, can be right twice a day, such as he is, for example, on the trade deals like TPP. Well, Norman, I always appreciate you helping to put some of these complex issues into context. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest is Norman Solomon. He is a coordinator of rootsaction.org and executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, among many other things that he does. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.